3D images aren't new to 2008, and they weren't new to the 1950s either. In fact, it was in the 1830s that British scientist Sir Charles Wheatstone invented the stereoscope, a device that created the illusion of depth in two-dimensional images. Nearly a century later, a couple of enterprising Americans figured out a way to adapt that technology to moving pictures, and so they did. Frederick Ives and Jacob Leventhal directed a series of silent films, Ouch, Lunacy, Zowie, and A Runaway Taxi, in 3D. They weren't exactly the runaway blockbusters of the Roaring Twenties, but they did give moviegoers a hint of what was possible. Ray Zone is the author of 3D Filmmakers, Conversations with Creators of Stereoscopic Motion Pictures. He says that 1939, the year of Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, was also a landmark year in 3D. At the New York World's Fair, the Chrysler Pavilion featured a film later retitled Motor Rhythm, billed as, quote, a miracle of music and animation. Zone says that millions got to see that 3D movie, a stop-motion short of a Chrysler, assembling itself.
Motor Rhythm marked the beginning of the classical twin-strip 3D movie process. That is, two cameras shoot the movie and two projectors project it onto a silver screen through polarizing filters, which are the same filters that the audience uses to view the film in 3D.
Now, in the 50s, the 1950s, when television had found its way into almost every American living room, Hollywood was undergoing a slump much like the slump it's undergoing today, and the studios were desperate to get people back into the movie houses. And along comes a film titled Buona Devil.
Buona Devil was an African adventure originally titled The Lions of Gulu. It was based on a true historic occurrence in the 1890s in Africa, where lions persisted in consuming workers who were on site to build a railroad. Bob Stack played the lead, and the romantic female counterpart was Barbara Britton. They shot Buona Devil with the Natural Vision twin camera system in the Malibu Hills, which stood in for Africa. It actually did that very well. Nigel Bruce, famous for his work in the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, also had a part in the film.
So Robert Stack, Elliot Ness, and Nigel Bruce, who was Dr. Watson.
That's correct.
These were the stars of Buona Devil. Now, these guys are not, in current parlance, known for being able to open a movie. They weren't big superstars. And yet Buona Devil was a phenomenal success.
Life magazine actually characterized the film as cheap and preposterous, but the 3D effects just knocked people out. There were lines around the block. And 2 days after Buona Devil opened at the Paramount Theaters, Jack Warner of Warner Brothers licensed the Natural Vision process so that he could go into immediate production with the first Warner Brothers 3D release, House of Wax. House of Wax tells the story of a frustrated artist, Vincent Price, who creates wax figures of scenes from history and famous characters.
This is where I recreated my Joan of Arc. It's an interesting process. If you have patience with me, my dear, I'll show you how it's done.
When they are destroyed in a fire and Price himself horribly disfigured, he decides to capitalize on the public's appetite for thrills and creates a chamber of horrors featuring famous murderers from history.
I'm rebuilding my exhibition from the ground up. I'm going to give the people what they want. Sensation, horror, shock. Send them out in the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Still a gold standard for 3D movie making. Ironically, it was directed by André de Toth, who only had one eye. That's correct. He had monocular vision.
I was so not expecting you to say that.
Well, he just simply had a great understanding of how depth is depicted, both in 2D and 3D. So some of the scenes in House of Wax make a great use of the effect to have objects emerge from the audience and walk into the screen.
Now, as much as a phenomenon as 3D films were in the 50s and early 60s, they kind of came and went and were scarcely heard from for decades. except for one brief interlude in 1969 with a movie called The Stewardesses, which was a softcore porn 3D movie.
The Stewardesses marked the beginnings of single-strip 3D movie technology, both for the camera and projection in the theater, where the left and right eye views were either stacked on top of each other or squeezed and put side by side on a single 35-millimeter frame. And it came out at a time when there were no 3D films in the feature film marketplace. So it did very well. It opened in 1969 in two theaters, one in Los Angeles, one in San Francisco. And then in subsequently different versions, had an increasingly wide release. It has grossed, in today's dollars, over $100 million.
Well, grossed would seem to be the key word. It's hard for me to imagine, and I'm not sure I even want to know the answer, but in exactly what part of the porn storytelling was the 3D invoked?
In The Stewardesses, there is surprisingly little aviation. Shots of aviation, airplanes taking off and so forth, are expensive to shoot.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just completed the overwater portion of our flight and are now entering the traffic pattern of Los Angeles International Airport. Please fasten your seatbelts and raise the seats to the full upright positions.
Most of The Stewardesses takes place on the ground and depicts the dalliances of the title characters. One strong section in the film has a amusement park where they visit some of the traditional attractions, like a ride in a fun house. It's thin on story, but its strength was there were no other 3D movies out there.
Another fallow period into the 80s, and then Friday the 13th, Part 3. Was that different technologically than previous attempts at 3D?
It was also single strip 3D, but Friday the 13th,
what's going on?
Part 3 in 3D, marked a landmark date in the history of 3D movies in that it was the first day and date release. August 12, 1982, it opened 1,200 theaters in North America. For that release, the theaters had to install silver screens, and Paramount built projection lenses in serially numbered cases with instructions for the projectionist and a test loop as to how to mount the lens on the projector and project it properly in 3D.
Now, one thing that struck me when I saw a 3D short film, the effect in modern days is just truly stunning. I mean, it is really remarkable how the images on the screen just jump out at you. But they're so stunning, so arresting, that it's almost impossible to follow the story because every 3 seconds you're being wowed practically out of your seat.
Absolutely. It's one of the artistic problems of the 3D movie, and that is using the 3D for storytelling and not in a way that it calls attention to itself and destroys the suspension of disbelief. In fact, when André de Toth directed House of Wax, the producer compelled him to put the famous paddle ball sequence in there, which is irrelevant to the story.
Hold steady now, don't move your head, or you'll lose the powder off your nose.
There's a guy who's basically a pitchman, a barker, out in front of the museum. He's shilling to the crowd to have them come in and see the new Chamber of Horrors, and he's got a paddle ball.
See the lovely sinners of ancient times, ladies and gentlemen, beauties who died in torture and on the block. Visit our Chamber of Horrors.
And then he makes it go right out at the camera, so it's out in the audience. It is so prominent and so gratuitous. And that's a historic problem. That is still a problem for 3D movies to become a mature storytelling art where the 3D is used in a narrative way. It needs to be done.
Ray, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for visiting with me.
Ray Zone is the author of Stereoscopic Cinema and the Origins of 3D Film, 1838 to 1952. His website is ray3dzone.com.
Hey, now cut that out right now. That's not funny.
Last week, we launched Project OTM T-shirt, in which we give you the information and you design an on-the-media T-shirt. This week, in order to demonstrate my personal commitment and enthusiasm for Project OTM T-shirt, I'm announcing that I will be doing this show topless from now until August 25th, when we select the winning design. So go to onthemedia.org, where you can find all the rules and regs for submitting your original on-the-media T-shirt design. And thanks for all the fabulous submissions we've received so far. That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Jamie York, Mike Folo, Mark Phillips, and Nazanin Rafsanjani, and edited by all of the above. We had help from Michael Bernstein, technical direction from Jennifer Munson, and more engineering help from Zach Marsh. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer, and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. This is On the Media from WNYC. Brooke will be back next week. I'm Carrie Nolan.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.